May 31, 2021, it's the Watch for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Pedro Show, happy Monday, last day of May. Then came, that's why I played this Blue Oyster Cult. Well, we'll play it in a little bit. But we start off the show with John Coltrane, You Say You Care, then Dues from Adam H. Brother Matt at the Love Grotto, a couple miles south here, quit quarantino mode still. But everybody's getting vaccinated up. I think 9 more days for me for second one. Moderna. I'm not totally man alone because of those Skype engineers in Estonia. I got Adam Hawker. Welcome aboard, Adam.
Thank you, Watt.
You're talking to me from Brooklyn, right?
Talking to you from Brooklyn, indeed.
What neighborhood?
I'm in Carroll Gardens right now.
Yeah, somebody's talking to me there a couple days ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Guitar man David First, I think.
Okay. How are things out in Pedro?
Well, I'm doing a show right now, talking to this guy in Brooklyn. Please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Earliest musical recollection. I would say Rolling Stones. My parents had a bunch of vinyls. They'd listened to them a whole lot. And they had the Hot Rocks compilation, and so I remember Sympathy for the Devil. That song really blew my mind when I was a little kid. So I listened to a lot of the classic Zeppelin, Stones, that kind of stuff.
Marianne Faithful?
Pretty. Go ahead.
Marianne Faithful?
Yeah. I didn't know that name, but I definitely knew that track. And I remember I thought it was really beautiful. No,
Marianne Faithful was girlfriend of Mick Jagger, and supposedly she gave him...
As Tears Go By.
No, that was the song he helped write for her, but...
Yeah.
If you let me finish, I'll tell you. Sympathy for Devil came from a book that she gave him by Misha Bulgakov called Master Margarita.
Amazing. Yeah. I did not know that.
Well, that's why I wanted you on the show so you could learn that. So your earliest musical memories is hearing your parents' record collection. Now, were they just listeners or did they play too?
They were casual listeners, but they did have some pretty good records. And so I spent... You know, my earliest kind of musical exposure was just kind of going through their collection because I grew up in southern Indiana, and it was pretty boring there. The only thing I could really do was just sort of, you know, put me in the position. You know, being bored is a good thing because, you know, you have to seek out ways to just sort of entertain yourself. And
well, let me ask you this. Was there any musical instruments in the pad you grew up?
There was a piano. And so I spent a lot of time playing the piano. And one of the great things that I did growing up was I did have, like, piano lessons. And so
Because, you know, a lot of people have been guests on the show. It was a horrible experience. How is it for you?
You know, it was actually positive.
Because
I actually had a pretty far-out
It's the teacher, right? That's usually the thing. If they ain't good at it, it usually is a shitty experience, it seems to be.
It is. And honestly, it was just this old woman who lived next door to me. And she showed me all sorts of stuff. You know, it's like
basic. Let me ask you this. Adam, what made her a good teacher?
She was a mixture of... she was loving but hard at the same time. So she would really encourage me when I did well. But, man, if I didn't practice, I was scared.
Did you learn to read?
Excuse me?
Did you learn to read?
I learned how to read the music. I learned a lot of basic theory, which sadly I think I've pretty much forgotten a lot of the theory. But I learned how to follow music pretty carefully.
Yeah, what about school? And it, What about at grade school? Were you in the marching band or the choir or shit like that?
No, never.
I wasn't there. I got to ask you, Adam.
Yeah. And I really kind of kept the piano just to my own sort of space. And I played a lot, though, because, again, I was in Indiana. And I was really bored.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Playing the piano a lot. What about the material? Are you writing your own, or is she teaching you songs? She's taught you how to read so you can read manuscripts. Or are you composing yourself? We're talking, you're a boy, right?
Yeah, I'm a boy. I'm like 6 years old.
Yeah.
And so I didn't, you know, she showed me all this just basic, you know, your standard classics. But she also really actively encouraged me to, like, listen to things, anything. I could bring anything to her. And she would kind of help me out with it. I remember I brought her like a Cat Stevens song that I really loved when I was little. And she actually like taught me how to play it, even though she had no idea really who Cat Stevens was. I learned a lot of things, and then I actually started writing my own stuff.
Yeah, though, that's what I'm trying to ask you. Did you start composing? Can you remember the first song you wrote?
Yeah, I wrote a waltz. I was 11 years old. I don't think I gave it a name, but I worked on that. And then, I wrote some pretty just kind of, I don't know, odd time signature sort of stuff, like waltzes, and like they sounded very much like classical music.
Waltz is 3/4 time. That's used in country too.
Yeah,
also,
I know.
Also is the 6/8 thing a little later on. So, but all this stuff is just you and your teacher. You're not really playing. You know the thing, not after school, like graduate, but in the afternoon.
Yeah.
The bedroom band, the basement band, the garage band. You don't do that with your classmates, your buddies.
Not yet. But once I hit high school, that's when that hit.
So you jump off the piano and you get on the guitar?
Bass to start. Yeah. Okay. And then also,
That's interesting. Why the bass? Why did you make the move from, now the piano's already got some bass going, right? The left hand.
Yeah. And so what happened was, there were some kids, in high school. And they'd started this punk band, and I was kind of this, you know, because I went to high school actually in Louisville, which was not too far away from where I grew up, but enough of a drive for me to not be able to go there just all the time. But I would go there for school, and because, you know, Louisville, it's a pretty tight-knit community, like unless you're from there, you can't get into it. So I was kind of a outsider. I didn't have a lot of friends in high school. And then for some reason, these kids who started this punk band, they asked if I played bass. And I said I did, but I didn't. And so I showed up to practice without a bass. And I asked if they had one. And they said they did. And then I just sort of played along as best as I could, because I'd had a guitar at home as well, that my uncle had sort of left behind. That's another story. My uncle was also a musician who sort of came into my life in middle school and high school. And so I sort of had learned the bass elements of like acoustic guitar. And luckily the other kids were terrible musicians as well.
Just starting learning.
Exactly. They let me in, even though I had no idea how to play the bass. And then I promised them after the first practice that I'd practice a lot and teach myself, and I did. And so we had this band in high school.
Do you have a name?
Yeah, it was Yosarian, after Catch 22.
Right, the Bombardier.
Yeah,
asking for it. He keeps saying, I'm the Bombardier.
Exactly.
Right. And mother, I tell you, there's Blue Oyster Cult Connect, because there's something on a sticker on their second album that, hey, this is black humor and shit. And, you know, I was a young teenager, and I asked my mother, what is black humor? She said, Michael White, you read Catch 22, Joe Heller.
That's true, man. That book's killer.
It's funny, but it's so funny, it ain't funny.
Oh, I know. It was actually the first You know, my parents, you know, in retrospect, they were pretty far out. I mean, they gave me Catch-22 and Hunter S. Thompson, I remember, because Hunter S. Thompson was from Louisville originally. And so that,
so
Catch-22,
was, you know who else? Muhammad Ali.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And,
and so, so the punk band though in high school, that really changed a lot because those kids I was playing with who were, who became like really good friends, they were into all sorts of things. And I remember there was like a lot, like many people have had. I remember they gave me a copy of White Light, White Heat when I was like 15 or 16.
Velvet Underground.
And that just cracked open my mind. I remember that record really altered a lot of
second
just
album.
And then I became just a VU fanatic, and then got into, and thanks to that band, then my mind, I mean, I just went everywhere. I was listening to, you know, free jazz, and I got into Coltrane, I got into Ornette Coleman, I got into all sorts of people, and then just kind of walked down that rabbit hole that the VU sort of is, you know, the ultimate gateway for. But yeah, so I'd say, you know, the picking up the bass, and then also, like I mentioned, my uncle, who's kind of a excellent folk musician, who almost made it, never quite cracked it, but got to play with some amazing people like Bert Jansch and Richard Thompson, you know, people like that. He started to send me records, just in the mail, cause he knew I was playing. And so I remember he gave me a John Fahey record when I was 15, the Death Chants Breakdowns and Military Waltzes.
Yep.
That record also in conjunction with the White Light, White Heat record, those two records side by side, I mean, they just altered my mind forever.
John Cale, you know, Vintage Violence, his solo records, he kind of did an acoustic thing.
He did.
Also a lot of electric guitar stuff with Chris Bedd. Look, I want to play a Sarah Band.
Do it, please.
Thank you. Thank you. kérdéssel, csak az idő kérdéssel, sírni fogsz értem.
Anxiety takes over the life that it surrounds. It's a rough time. rich long. The pressure builds on, relationships break down, anxiety takes over the life that it surrounds. If the rope doesn't fit, take a grip from above, below the highway, break it way to a hidden place, Lord. Torment is a tenement, paying for someone else to own the house you worked all your life for them to benefit. Just to be evicted at the end of it, so the card you rented it can claim you invested in and earn the right to choose their residence. From your blood, sweat, the time and effort you spend in it. Torment is not knowing where you're next, rest your head, can't sleep on sentiment. Torments are grief and realization that you spent an entire life trying to save a love and built in constant dread of it. The pressure builds up, relationships break down, anxiety takes over the life that it surrounds. If the rope doesn't fit, take a grip from above, below the hammer, break it, which is where hate replaces love. The pressure builds up, relationships break down, anxiety takes over the life that it surrounds. If the rope doesn't fit, take a grip from above, below the hammer, break it, which is where hate replaces love. Torment is this way, you can't live under a roof without the pay-per-view subscription to see some liberal truth. Can't afford the prescription, that your torment is proof that it's you who drew this affliction, the torment let loose. Can you reject the inhibition till it's no longer here? Tormented wonder where or whether you'll eat next this year. Breakfast in a bin, wrapped in a pretense of fear. There's a thicker rug, golden lights, everything disappears. Depression fills up, relationships break down, anxiety takes over the life that it surrounds. If the rope doesn't fit, take a grip from above, below the hammer, break it, which it were hit the place low. The pressure fills up, relationship break down, anxiety takes over the life that it surrounds. If the rope doesn't fit, take a grip from above, below the hammer, break it, which it were hit the place low. Torment is a medic, card expired, not being renewed. Torment is a 6 month wait to have the team reviewed. Torment is a child on the waiting list denied. Torment is the terror that they might not survive. Torment is a buzzer bun buying up the blocks. Torment is a nervous tick, exacerbate never stops. Torment is a feeling you have nowhere to turn. Torment is the stress that has you broken and burned. The pressure builds up, relationships break down, anxiety takes over the life that it surrounds. If the rope doesn't fit, take a grip from above, below the heart will break, give way to where hate replace love.
The weather's fine in that's how I feel. But things don't always go to the highest bid.
Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off Adam H. doing Sarah Band, then Blue Oyster Cult with Then Came the Last Days of May. I mean, it's the last day of May. Well, actually, it's about a dope deal that went bad. It's legal in Cali now. New York, too, from where they are.
Yeah.
Okay, SLWCC Watt, after that Fuck Your Guitar, that's a collab I did with Sam Locke Ward in Iowa City. The Myriad Ones, Bob Buckle Jr. from nearby Dubuque, Moonfight out of Ithaca, upstate New York, Toy Mango with Just a Matter of Time, Done Deal, actually from Pedro here, Mike Ortiz, Small Time, from Dublin, Ireland, Deep in the Woods featured Cap Moonlight and Rogue Spore with Tormented, and finally Adam H. with Solidesia. Okay, so big influence on your uncle. I mean, he's not really sending you bass guitar stuff, but you're playing bass guitar with Yossarian. What was the first Yossarian gig like?
First one. Oh man, we played at this. You know, Louisville's a big punk town. There's a lot of hardcore music comes out of there. It's a really tight-knit, hardcore community. So there was
Bardstown Road. It's all along the river. I played Stooligans many times. I've done three or four derby days where you have to play at 2, 3 in the morning because dudes are getting fucked up on the mint julep. But there's also some good old vintage guitar and amp stores in the old days, maybe not anymore with the internet.
Yeah, no, the Bardstown Road.
Well, tell me about this gig.
So we played a place called Pandemonium on Bardstown Road, as you just mentioned. And this place, Pandemonium, it was just kind of a dive. But for some reason, you know, whoever was booking there, they would sometimes, you know, draw some sizable names. I remember like a week after we played, like Black Heart Procession played there. And I was kind of somewhat amazed that they had booked us and then we're actually booking a real band like a week after we played.
You got to tell me, Adam, how'd the gig go? Was it a success? Did they throw shit? What happened?
They didn't throw shit. Actually the really surprising commentary that I got from somebody was, that was really not as bad as I was expecting it to be.
Now, you guys You weren't the songwriter, since you're probably the last guy who joined, right?
No, no. So the guy who started the group was a friend of mine, and John Ashley, and so he was writing most of the songs with another close friend of mine named Nadim, and so they sort of put it all together, and I was just kind of there. I was, you know, kind of absorbing it. It was my first real group project.
Right. How long did you do that before you heading out on your own? The Adam H. experience.
It was a long road, man. So I went to college, and I got so sucked into college that I just didn't. I still listened to tons of music, and I was a DJ at the radio station and all that. And I was still playing all the time, so I guess I was just like, I don't know, figuring out what kind of music I wanted to make then. But I didn't really connect with other musicians when I was at college, because it was this really intense sort of scholarly experience, University of Chicago. And so, like, I was playing there, and I just play in my room all the time and listen to records all the time and then go and do my radio show all the time.
Are you talking Champaign Urbana?
No, this is in Southside, Chicago.
Oh, okay.
And
because I just talked to a guy last week from Champaign.
Yeah,
you
know, that's
the Fight Illini and that stuff.
Yeah, and so, but the thing that the university had, because this is early 2000s, was they had this, the record library was incredible. And so I think I spent all my time, just because I was, you know, DJing, I could get all the records. And so I just remember just listening, because this was, you know, pre-streaming. And so it was like I'd hit the Holy Grail. And since I still have my scavenger Southern Indiana instinct of just absorb as much media in all forms as possible at all times, I just devoured this record, you know, this multi-thousand vinyl collection. So, I mean, the bands that I really got into then was like The Fall and like all the post-punk stuff and again, but still really,
You're not playing with other guys at college doing songs. No. Yeah.
Cause actually what happened then was my uncle, he mailed me a guitar, and this thing changed my life. So what he did was he found this guitar. He was living in San Francisco where he still lives now. And he was driving down, like, I don't know, 24th Street, something like that there. And he saw a guitar and two pieces on the street, and he stopped and he picked it up, and it was a Gibson. And he was, looked at it, and he was like, this is a really nice guitar. It's unfortunately in two pieces. But he knew a luthier, who's a great one named Alan Perlman, who makes beautiful guitars. And so he went to see his buddy Alan Perlman. He was just like, I don't know this, if you can put this together. I don't know if it's a nice guitar. It's still got life in it. And so Perlman spent just some free hours putting it together. And he actually he put it together using a fallen California redwood tree. So
what the real name is? They're called sequoias, and it's probably the oldest living organism on the planet.
I did not know that.
Yeah, people, termites don't like them, so they make fucking houses out of them. But yeah.
Amazing. Well, that's why the guitar has lasted so long, then, because this guitar, I got this thing, and so they put it together. Perlman had sort of redone everything, and then they were like, "What do we do with it?" And then my uncle was like, "We'll send it to Adam." And so I got this guitar in the mail out of nowhere.
That's beautiful. You know, Sandy Perlman was the manager of the Blue Oyster Cult. A lot of connections here, Adam. We're at the end of the first hour.
Okay.
Last day of May, May 31, 2021, Dish Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Adam Hocker. Hold tight for hour two. 31st, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
crows for hire to keep on hanging John Brown. The barrier will happen, the signal was sharpened, the transmitter made out of skin. And yet what the diaper, blood that you offer, is so rough as wine at the chill. The taste it is bitter, and it might make you rich. Surely you'll drink up your fill. Retribution.
Sometimes despise them, but in truth they understand a small performance. Take your time, stop wanting, stop needing. Let me carry you.
Thank you.
Walk for Pedro show. Start off the second hour with Adam H., Abolition Rag. Ben Salter out of Tasmania with Hurt after that. Then Lucas Abella from Sydney with BMW. Fucking mind blow. Albert DeMuth after that. I think from Black Heart Procession to San Diego, right? I think Albert DeMuth is down there.
San Diego,
Adam, once I think I shared a stage with him at the Casbah. Adam H. finally with Orion, which everybody knows is the Archer of the Sky with the three stars that make up the belt that align with the three great periods of Giza. Okay, so you get this guitar in the mail, and you're still at college, right?
Yeah, I'm still in college, yeah. And this guitar, you know, it's a magical thing, this guitar. It's the instrument that I still play primarily today. And that guitar has been with me through everything. And so it's been a, you know, kind of my closest ally throughout everything. And so this guitar, you know, I started just playing it all the time, as, you know, guitar freaks do. But then my uncle started, you know, he kept sending me records, you know, so he'd send me these, you know, Bert Jansch and Robbie Basho, Morfehi, you know, Peter Lang, all sorts of stuff. I was trying to learn from them. And then, that was when he started telling me about open tunings. And this was another thing that completely just blew my mind, the open tuning. He guided me through some initial open tunings, you know, like Bad Gad and, you know, the open G, stuff like that. And then,
you know, a lot of those, like Keith Richards used, they came from actual banjo.
Incredible.
Yeah,
incredible.
Ry Cooter, I think, turned Keith onto that. But anyway, this starts to, because you're writing songs, but because of you changing the tunings, it's a different way to compose.
Well, so I wasn't even composing then, really. I was still learning. I was putting myself through this kind of crazy.
You mean you're learning other people's songs with the weird tunings?
I'm learning old blues stuff, you know, that's it, like Skip James songs, sure. You know, and the open D minor, you know, sure. Really crazy tunings. Yeah. So anytime I'd hear a piece and I didn't know how to play it because the tuning was crazy, I would ask my uncle or ask, you know, someone connected to him, and they would be like, oh, you have to tune your guitar like this. And so I would get this crazy new tuning, and then I'd spend like a month just sort of learning it and deconstructing my guitar and rebuilding it around that tuning. And then I was learning finger picking, and I was learning, you know, all sorts of just unusual ways of just playing it. Because I was never into like the guitar heroics. I was more into like the fact that this simple like box of wood with just six strings on it could suddenly change form and color if you just tune the tuners in a different way. And so just the fact that this basic organic object could suddenly become an entirely different instrument within like 2 minutes of tuning work. This just blew my mind. I just ran with it. I was just learning every tuning. It's the first time I'd, you know, heard of, like, for instance, like Glenn Branca and like people who were just anybody.
Well, you know,
who was
Glenn,
playing.
He had his guys actually like put all B strings on and shit. I mean, it was more than just tuning.
Oh yeah, well, I played with Branca and his orchestra one time.
Yeah,
and,
I did too. I did the 13th Symphony, Hallucination City.
Yeah,
and. Well, there was 19 other bassists and 64 other guitars. One drummer. But I got to play regular strings, but the guitar guys were like rocking B strings.
Yeah, it's crazy. Mine was I played the 16th in Paris, and it was all high E strings. But it was B strings tuned up to E along every string.
So they're good and tight to slice up your fucking fingers.
Exactly.
And groups of five. So, yeah. but the big difference, he's rocking the electric guitar, and it sounds like what you're doing is acoustic stuff.
Oh yeah. So I the thing is as well, which I've never.
I mean,
been
music
able to,
is music. I'm not against it.
No. Because I so the thing is like I you know, of course I picked up an electric at some point. You know, it's just like, is you know, once you get into the guitars, you know, it's like a fly.
Well, your uncle probably, then, I bet your uncle bummed a little bit. He probably wanted you to keep on the acoustic.
And the thing is even when I was, you know, switching to electric and playing around with it, it never felt as, you know, like it wasn't my space. You know, the acoustic, I can't describe it.
No, but I noticed he wasn't sending you records of Jimmy and shit.
No, it was all really...
Yeah, Faye and
Beauty. Yeah.
I mean, music. I'm not trying to say one's better than the other. Adam, no. I want to play Obsidian.
Do it.
Obsidian, I have been lifted. Oblivion gave me a try. And tell the world to hide the meaning wherein lies. And are you tired of the really pleasant dreams that drag out of your mind? Shut it down and we'll sweep up the debris. To the sand. Thank you.
Just look
Walk for Pedro Show started that chunk off with Adam H. doing Obsidian. Then Heinbach with Ring the Bell. Trapper Shoop after that brand new May Day, even though it's the last of May. Should have played it 4 weeks ago. Blood Quartet, brand new out of Barcelona. This is, speaking of Glenn Branca and the No Way scene, a cat from Mars is in this band. He moved to Catalonia a long time ago.
That's Mark Cunningham.
That, yeah, you know Blood Quartet, great fucking band.
Yeah, I saw him in Barcelona. We had a drink one time. He's a really cool guy.
And his band is, he's playing with Catalans, and they're just smoking cats. And this is brand new. And then finally, Adam H with Shrill.
Yeah.
Now, okay, you're out of college. You got an electric guitar.
Yeah.
What happens to you music? Do you put together an Adam H. band?
I start a post-punk band called Scary Living, which I didn't really like in the end.
Whose fault? Whose fault?
It was my fault.
Okay. I just wanted to hear that, Adam.
it was my bad, but I had to do it.
Of course. You learn by doing, right? By living.
I did it. And so it was something, because that was when I went with the electric for a while, which was a mistake.
It was a mistake?
It was.
Why?
It was a mistake. I started writing differently. And I wrote some songs. I played a lot. There was a great circle of bands that I was playing in. I loved their music. And I had a great time playing, of course, but then I just felt really ill at ease playing that kind of music, this really intense, you know, dark, but very classically like 1979, 1980 kind of vibe music. And I felt like a poser, sort of, I guess. I felt like I was not being honest with myself. And so I started, you know, we recorded some. It didn't really go anywhere. And then I started just gravitating back to the acoustic. And just sort of, that's when kind of Adam H. just sort of kicked in. I started writing all of a sudden all these songs, dozens of songs. It was just like, I don't know, the faucet got turned on and I started writing all the time. And so I couldn't really stop writing these songs.
These weren't for an ensemble like with the electric, right? This is more man alone, right?
No. And then the band completely fell apart, made some enemies, all is good now. But yeah, I got called some names. And then
wow, that's not too cool.
Yeah. But I knew, I don't know, I just knew I had to keep following what I was doing on the acoustic. And then that was Adam H. That was like 26 years old. I started just writing all the time. And it was like all the music I'd been listening to suddenly started to, like, it was like all of these bizarre seeds had been planted in my brain. And then they started to finally, like, germinate.
It's like the 17-year cicada.
Exactly. That's me. I'm a cicada. What?
Right? But they call it Brood X. These guys have been in the fucking ground 17 years.
Yeah.
They got them in Japan. This is about 10 years ago. I was in Tokyo in the summertime, and I thought there was construction next door. These motherfuckers were so loud. It was like circular saws and fucking sawzalls. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, Ad. May 31st, 2021, Dish Wap Pedro Show. Special guest, Adam Hocker. Hold tight for hour three. May 31, 2021. It's the third hour of the Wap Pedro Show.
There in a row, change your face, but not your name. These changes stay the same.
Watford Pedro Show. We start off the third hour with Adam H. doing Turn of Phrase. Got some weird noises over there. Balmus Prendon after that, Animus Maximus. And then Adam H. with Ithaca. Yeah, that's where fucking Toy Mango is from. Cornell, right? The college.
Oh, that's Chicago.
Cornell?
Chicago.
Ithaca.
Ithaca, yeah. That's Cornell. Yeah.
Yeah, remember Carl Sagan? Billions upon billions. He was the famous physicist there. I got to play with meat puppets there about 40 years ago. Now, on with your story. Okay, so Adam H., you start doing gigs. Man Alone is Adam H. with all the buttload of songs you just wrote.
Yes, I did. And I also moved to Paris. And so I'd been in New York before then. That was when I was playing that post-punk group. And so I moved to Paris. I met my wife, and we ended up over in Paris. And then thanks to a mutual friend, because, you know, I've been in New York for years kind of circulating around playing shows, I met a friend of mine named Kid Millions, who's a drummer. He plays with a bunch of bands. Oneida is his most famous one, but he also plays with Man Forever. And so Kid Millions told me that when I moved to Paris, I had to meet somebody named Rhys Chatham, who lived in Paris.
Ah, there's, and, you know what? He was in a parallel universe to Glenn Branca.
Exactly.
They didn't know, though. Thurston told me they didn't know about each other at first.
No. And so I met Rhys, and Rhys, he was just like, so you're the guitarist that Kid sent. I was like, yeah. And he was like, I've got a gig next month at Palais de Tokyo, which is like MoMA or something like that. And he was like, you want to play? So I was like, sure. And so I got to spend all this time with Rhys. And then while I was playing with Rhys, he invited me to play on an album that he was recording. And while recording this album, I met what would turn to be my musical partner in Paris named Jean-Charles Versari. And so Jean-Charles was running the studio, and he and I became friends during the recording of this Rhys record. And then, Jean-Charles, he's an old punk. He plays really scary, intense, heavy music that's very beautiful, but it's out there. And but I found out that he was also a folk fanatic. Like he loved just all this old stuff. And so I told him that I'd written a bunch of material, and I was hearing some really kind of unusual drones and, you know, somewhat, you know, intense sounds behind them. And I said, how about, you know, you bring kind of that vibe to these folk songs and maybe it'll work. So we started rehearsing, and after a few rehearsals, he just said, well, we're just going to record this record in my studio. We're starting now. And so we worked on the record Abolition, which is Sarah Band, Obsidian, these songs that you've been playing.
Sure.
We recorded that in his studio in Paris. Whenever he had a free day, he would just call me and be like, come on over. We played, practiced all the time, and then, started doing some great shows around Paris and around France. And the record came out in 2017, and that was a lot of fun. It did decently in France. I wished it would have, you know, gone a bit beyond the French confines, but I'm all right with it, man. A record coming out now and is a triumph for me.
Okay.
So
I want to play. You gave me a couple songs here. I think it's related to this cat you met there and recorded with, because it's sure got some fucking drum. They're both about floods.
Well, that's actually afterwards.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Adam H. with The Flood of 1997. Then we had Slang from Hokkaido, Amid the Raw Pain. Little tune, close to the heart. And then finally, Adam H., The Flood of 2064. It hasn't come yet, but...
on its way.
Now, people, very dangerous when you assume. You can make an ass out of you and me. My pop said that was not spelled by accident. Anyway, this, even though he made a drony thing with this cat, and they tore it around, and you helped Reese, these two, I've been enlightened to the fact that it's beyond that. Explain, please.
So what happened was, I really liked the sound that was coming from Abolition, and I thought I could push it further. I spent a while trying to figure out how to do it. But I knew that there was something in those drones. There was something powerful in them kind of lurking around. And so I spent a couple of years kind of, you know, thinking about it, listening to records. You know, I started listening to Pauline Oliveros and some composers who experimented with drones. And I was listening to all sorts of drone music. And then something happened where, some of my friends, I started getting phone calls just, you know, so-and-so had OD'd, just from Louisville. I started hearing all sorts of stories. I started hearing, you know, every month or so, something terrible was coming out of Louisville. And some was either somebody I knew had, you know, had disappeared or, you know, something bad had happened. And, I started to really, really think about it a lot and wonder what it meant. And then I read an article by an author named Patrick Radden Keefe about this family called the Sackler family. And that all of a sudden the lights went on in my head. I was just saying, this isn't personal problems, you know. This wasn't them making their own choices here. This is institutionalized violence against people making money
on it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I got really angry. And I started thinking, I was like, these are not isolated incidents, you know. It started to affect people all over. I started just hearing about stories everywhere about this. And I just kept getting angrier and angrier. And then I realized that's what I wanted to do with this next record, was I wanted to, in a better world, take down the Sackler family with my music, which is a lot to say in a sentence, but it was
my come on. Walt Whitman tried to stop the Civil War with his Leaves of Grass. I think it's okay,
yeah.
Adam. I think it's perfectly okay.
Well, I got really upset about it, and so I started really thinking about how to do it. How could I do it? I had to make something, as intense as I could. And so I had this really bizarre waltz, The Flood of 1997. And so I started writing kind of a fictional account of what was going on in Louisville, just with these characters that I sort of imagined, you know, that were similar to the stories I was hearing. And then I was thinking, but for me to be able to sing about these stories, I don't want it to be some weepy folk piece, because that's just lame. I need to earn the right to speak about this. And the only way I thought I could do that was I'd have to drag the waltz through hell. And I had to figure out how to make hell. And so I had to really raise hell. And so I reached out to Kid Millions, and I told him I needed him to destroy a waltz. And he said he could do it. And then I said, you play sometimes with Jim Sauter from Borbita Migas, you know, the legendary jazz noise band from the 80s. And I was like, he can destroy the waltz too. And Kid said, yeah, let's try it. And so Jim said he was on board. And then I reached out to Tim Dahl, who plays with Lydia Lunch, Retrovirus, and Child Abuse, and a bunch of other bands. And I said I needed him to destroy a waltz with me. And he said, I'm down. So we recorded this totally intense session. And then everything kind of clicked. And so I tried to fuse this acoustic waltz in this D minor tuning that I love with free jazz and noise, and tried to just essentially obliterate this waltz so that it would give me the right to sort of speak these words about what happened in Louisville. And yeah. So this record...
Well, you're making music very, very personal. I'm cutting you off here because I'm running out of time. I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
this
fine.
Is a great fucking story because, you know, a real substance here behind this stuff. Where can people find you on the internet, Adam?
So you can find me streaming anywhere, like just Adam H. Abolition, Adam H. Glacier.
No, but do you have an Adam Hawker website?
AdamH.Weebly.com.
Okay. And from you probably got all your other links, so people can...
Yeah, it's all... I'm on Facebook. I'm on, you know, you can find...
Yeah, but the corporate ones, but there is an Adam one.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, okay. You got I got to say bye to you now, but you got something new planned? Are you doing something right in the meantime now?
So, finishing a record, but I want to say on that record, Floods, I'm giving away all whatever money comes to me, and I'm giving it away to recovery organizations.
Oh, that's
really
beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
When you get this next record done, will you come back? Will you come on the show and we can talk about it?
Oh, hell yeah.
You won't
yeah.
have to talk about the piano in the old days or anything.
I'm ready. I'm ready. I'll come on anytime, Watt.
Okay, yeah. Beautiful having you aboard. People, it's been May 31, 2021 edition of Watt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.